This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to Homesdale Radio and thank you for downloading this special podcast. This show was originally recorded as part of the Burnley Preview Pod, but we've cut out all of that to bring you both interviews from our special guests, Ian Walsh and Vince Allaire, from our 1979 winning team. Remember to join Terence and the team every Thursday for his preview podcasts. Enjoy.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk. The next generation of fantasy football.
Right, so now's the time in the show where we talk about our classic match, and we have one of the all-time Palace classics here. It's the 11th of May 1979, and it's Crystal Palace looking for victory to climb up to Division 1. And joining me, Patrick and Nick, we have a very, very exciting guest. We have Ian Walsh, scored the first goal that day. Welcome, Ian.
Hi, how are you guys? All right?
How you doing, Ian? Welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, it really is a privilege. Thanks very much.
Mate, I was only born in 1982, so I obviously missed this. The other two chaps, one was at the game and one was gone to a lot of games that season. So I'll just start off before those two wade in with a couple of questions. But how did you get that much power on that header?
Well, I'd been practicing for a while. You know, I was that was more my strength than anything else, and I'd been practicing for a while. You know, and when you've got great wide players like Vinny Allaire, you know, putting the ball across to you, I think the pace was in the cross more than my power. I just had to get the accuracy on it, and fortunately, it was one of my all-time favourite goals, you know, to score a goal just inside the penalty box in the top corner in such a massive game. It took the pressure off everybody, and I could relive that as if it was yesterday.
And what was the noise like? Because it's still to this day Crystal Palace's record attendance at Selhurst Park, which is, you know, maybe unlikely ever to be broken, but it must have been quite a noise.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I've still got pictures of... I think it would have been the Holmesdale Road end when it was all standing, or possibly it was the other end. I can't remember back in the day, but it was amazing. You know, we scored, you know, 52,000 in there. I think 4,000 or 5,000 couldn't get in on a night. I brought loads of family up from South Wales, and you know, it was one real right night to remember.
It certainly was one of the nights that I wish I could have been at. But Nick, you were there. Have you got any questions for Ian?
Ian, first of all, thanks for that goal. But I don't know if anybody's ever told you, but you actually owe me a pair of Dr. Martin boots that night when that header went in. Okay, yeah. I got crushed. Okay, and my brand new leather Dr. Martin boots got torn by the crowd. Okay, and I hold you personally responsible. But it was worth every penny of it.
Well, but just send me the bill in the post in South Wales, and you might get an answer.
So I've got to ask you about the build up to the game. There's two conflicting crowd sizes. It said 51,800 and 51,400. I know the doors were locked on that night, probably by about 6 o'clock. What was it like in the change rooms, knowing full well that it was going to be that sort of size crowd?
Well, we knew the importance of the game. You know, I think it was literally, if we win, we go up as champions. And I think we possibly, even if we drew the game, it might not have been good enough. So the pressure was on, and for the final few games of the season, you know, Terry Venables took us away to a hotel, and sort of we had a bit of lunch. We trained in the morning, had a bit of lunch, and then sort of all relaxed in sort of bedrooms throughout the afternoon. And when we got to the ground, it was just unbelievable. You know, it's the tightest place to get to anyway, Selhurst Park, but trying to get our coach literally a couple of miles from the hotel down to the ground was unbelievable. You know, we were just having, everybody was tapping, you know, it was all very friendly, tapping the bus, wishing us good luck. We got in there and it was just a relief to get out of the coach and into the changing room. And then we all obviously went out to have a look at the pitch, as you do as a professional, just to see what sort of studs you might wear. But that, the adrenaline amongst all the players, you'd look into the people's eyes there. You know, the great team that we had from, you know, John Burridge at the back, Jimmy Cannon, Billy Gilbert, Kenny Sansom, you know, Peter Nicholas, Swindy, Dave Swindlers up front. And Countess Moore, Terry, I could go through them all, Paul Hinshelwood, Terry Fenwick, you know, Jerry Murphy, all absolutely top class players at the time. And I think there was just a silence in the changing room and a confidence, really, because we knew we had the best defensive record. We struggled a bit to score goals in that season, but the defenders and the goalkeeper were phenomenal for us. But, you know, and then all of a sudden, about half an hour before kickoff, we were down in the changing room. We could hear the buzz building up in the ground. And, you know, and when we actually went out to start the game, it was just unbelievable. You couldn't hear your teammates screaming at you. It was that emotional. It was that frantic. And to this day, as I said, you know, the reason why I've come on your show is because I remember it like it was yesterday. And even though one of you guys there wasn't born at the time.
Well, you say we struggled to score goals that season. It's quite amazing that a team can go up as champions scoring only 51 times in 42 games. So at half-time being 0-0 and getting on into the second half, was there any worry that the goal wasn't going to come?
Well, obviously there was worry, and it was sort of my job and Dave Swindlers and Vince Hilaire. They were, you know, we were the three sort of goal scorers, if you like, and a couple from midfield. But, you know, there was a worry, and we played against Burnley, and one of my great mates in football is a lad called Leighton James, who played for Burnley, and he was a Welsh international player. And I'll change the words slightly. As we trotted onto the pitch at the start of the second half, he said to me, "Walshy, if we go one up, you'll crap yourself." And I said, "You most probably will." And so I've changed a couple of words. But, of course, when that cross came in and I managed to get the perfect connection on it and it sailed into the roof of the net, the pressure was completely taken off, because we knew we had a defence that would keep a clean sheet. So even though it was a bit tentative, and then Swindy got a second goal in the game to relieve all the tension, it was just unbelievable. One of the best nights, you know, I played 300-400 league games, different clubs. I played international football. I'll tell you that is right up there, the atmosphere that night. And to be able to help Palace win the game and get promotion was unbelievable.
What was I always like about this as well, and going on to become the team in the 80s, so-called, is that it was home-built. And Patrick, you wanted to ask about sort of the youth system around that time?
Yeah, Ian, it's Patrick here. I moved to the States about a month before that match. I'd been to almost every home match that year. But the year before, I got to see you know, all the youth players, Nicholas, Fenwick, Billy Gilbert, come through the system. As a question, did you get to play in any of the FA Cup youth finals that we won those 2 years?
Yeah, we did. We won. You'll have to, you know, the big games I can remember. You know, even though we won the FA Youth Cup, we did win it with that team, and we won it a year ahead of our time. So that was the nature of, you know, how good those players were. And as you said, there was Kenny Sansom was arguably the top player amongst the lads. It was Billy Gilbert, Peter Nicholas, myself, you know, Jerry Murphy,
Vince Hilaire,
you know, all these guys were all, you know, went on to play at least under 21 or full international football. So, and Terry Venables, you know, did a great job. You know, he brought a lot of the young players, and Malcolm Allison, to be fair, before him, you know, signed a lot of the young players. When we were going to Crystal Palace in the old second division or third division. Right. And, you know, I had Man United after me. I had Aston Villa after me. I had a lot of other clubs, as did Kenny. Kenny could have gone to Tottenham, Arsenal. Vince could have gone to Chelsea. No, but we all, for some reason, joined Crystal Palace, and it was the start of something quite unique.
Yeah, I'll just add that the one thing I've always loved about being a Palace supporter is seeing those youth players come through again. I was very lucky back in those late 70s to see you guys come through, and it's something I've always loved to see local players come through. So thanks for that again.
Pleasure.
And Ian, so I was having a little look through your Twitter today, and I saw your kids in, is it your kids in Palace shirts or your grandchildren in Palace shirts?
You've been following me on, that's my grandson.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
My son, his first football kit was a Palace kit. And I've got to say, it brought a tear to my eye when he came home. You know, so they had obviously, my son had sent his sister, my daughter, a kit. And Charlie was there in the kit in the back garden, just knocking a ball about. Great stuff.
That's fantastic. Look, Ian, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you get back off to your holiday in sunny Tenerife. Is it sunny out there?
It is. It's brilliant. It's about just under 30, guys. So
not sure. Listen, all there, mate. Thank you for that.
Cheers, Ian. Really,
hey, listen, guys.
It.
It's been a privilege coming on your show, and I always follow the Palace results. And good luck to everybody up there. Okay.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Mate. Thank you.
Bless you, Ian. Thank you. Every picture
tells a story. Keep up to date with ours on Instagram at Holmesdale Radio.
Right. And now we have another special guest joining us on this preview podcast. I can't quite believe it. You've just heard from Ian Walsh, and now we've got the man that provided him with a cross, Mr. Vince Hilaire. Thank you so much for joining us, Vince.
No worries at all.
Right. So, it's 1979. Does it feel just like yesterday, or is it a while ago?
In my mind, it does, but my body will say different. But no, I think I've seen the goal more times than that on my various returns to Selhurst and on YouTube and on different social media sites. I've seen the goal quite a few times from particularly Palace fans who were there. I mean, they said it was 50,000 there, but I think there was more there. I think I've met 150,000 fans that actually at the game. So,
yeah. So, right, the game's gone on. We've got 14 odd minutes before the end of time. When you put that cross in, do you think Walshy's got that finish in him?
Yeah, well, I think the thing about Walshy was, you know, wasn't a particularly big guy, but he had a great spring. And between him and Swindy, I think Mickey Elwis started the season, but he got a bad injury around about October time, and then Walshy came in and did a great job up front with Swindy till the end of the season. And I think most of my time was taken up in training and after training with Swindy and Walshy. Actually saying to me, am I ever going to get a cross in a game during the course of the season? And I always had the same reply to him, and my reply was I didn't know what an end product was. I was an entertainer, and crossing was very low down on my priority. And, so I thought at that time I might as well get one in. That's what I'm stuck out on the wing for. So If you get a ball in the box, particularly in Walshy's case, because he was a tremendous player in the air, then he's likely to get on the end of it. And I think it was probably the first cross I got in the game, 14 minutes from time. It's a bit sad, really, for a wide player.
would you mind crossing to Christian Benteke these days?
Yeah, I've watched a few of the Palace games and watched Saturday. It's a bit of a strange one for Christian Benteke because Palace are not so direct in their game now, and yet they've got a centre forward who probably thrives on being involved all the time. You know, you get some players that if they're out of the game for long periods, their mind tends to wander, and someone like Christian Benteke could give that impression. You know, it looks like he's not bothered or not. On the ball, but it's probably because the Palace build up now is a lot more. There's a lot more stuff that goes from.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
From the back to the midfield and out wide and maybe trying to get Christian Benteke to come short. And it just takes some adjusting. I think he probably, when he signed for Palace, he probably thought he was signing for the Palace team of last season that was a little bit more direct and not for the Palace team that played the stuff through the middle of the park and like Liverpool. That's probably one of the reasons why he thought he would be attracted to leave Liverpool and not stay there and come to Palace.
I certainly think he'll score goals this season. But anyway, let's get back to 1979. You said there was definitely over 50,000 people there that night. I think the official attendance is around 51,400. People there will swear there was over 60,000 people there. What was the noise like when that goal went in?
It was phenomenal. It was a phenomenal night, and it was. I think it wasn't such a big roar. I think it was more about relief actually from the fans. I mean, remembering the goal, I do remember it as if it was yesterday, and. I'm usually, because there were so little cameras at games in those days, I was usually, if a goal was scored and the cameras were there, I was usually one of the first there, whether I was involved in it or not, just so I could get on the TV. but it was such a relief to score. I couldn't be bothered for once in my life to run over to Walshy, so I just turned around to Fish, Paul Inchelwood, and we just cuddled each other, and I said, I think we've done it this time, Fish, and he said, yeah, so... That was the most abiding memory, and the relief from the fans was great. And you know what, anyone who was there, it was easily not 50,000. You know, you could add another 5,000 or 6,000 onto that. It was just showed you really at the time. I mean, at the time we didn't consider ourselves anywhere near like the poor relations in London. We consider ourselves certainly on a par with Chelsea and probably on a par with Tottenham, even in that division. So, and we knew that we were, you know, that just showed us running out that night that we were at a big club, one of the biggest in London. So, you know, all things considered, it was a pretty memorable night.
You was calling Paul Hinchelwood Fish there. Where did that nickname come from?
Well, he was very. He had a few nicknames for the Palace fans. The one from the players was Fish because he had again something that wouldn't happen now. But he had a great capacity, drinking capacity. Paul,
nice.
And also on top of that, he was probably one of the fittest players in the team, which doesn't bode well for us because none of the young players at Palace at the time were particularly big drinkers or drinkers for that matter, and. Fish was still beating us in all the running and the training, so just shows you what he could have been like without that. But that's what it was basically about, Fish.
Okay. So, how exciting was it going up to Division One at that time? Because as you say, you saw yourself that you belonged there. Was it great to actually finally, you know, you were there? You were in Division One. You were in the. Did you guys call it the Promised Land back then? I don't know. Sorry, I'm quite young.
Well, no, fans called it the Promised Land, but the problem, I think, the major problem we had was that there's so many of us that were young. I mean, I bumped into Stevie Kemba a couple of weeks back. He was down watching a game at Portsmouth, which is where I live, just on the outskirts of Portsmouth now, and talking to Steve and he looked he turned around and said, "You know what?" He said, I feel younger now than when I played. He said, doing and directing all you youngsters in that, you know, for those couple of seasons that we played, he said, took it out of me. He said, I aged about 15 years. And the problem with us is that I think all the stuff that happened to us as young footballers happened far too early. And it would have been good to understand what, from the age from about 16 to 19, 20, what it was like to struggle a little bit, but we was always on the up till then. So really, what I'm trying to say is a lot of the glory times for us at Palace, and particularly myself, was taken for granted, you know. And but you know, you only know those things from getting older and, you know, living your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vince, it's Patrick here. I'm the one that moved. Patrick. How are you, Vince? I'm the one that moved. I to the States in 79. I was lucky enough that year to go to almost every home match, and then my parents decided to emigrate. And I saw you and Walshy and Kenny and Billy come through the youth team. So it was wonderful to see you guys do so well. But my question is, I know that we by winning that match, we pipped our old rivals Brighton to the title. How great did that feel?
That was brilliant. But you know, it was the rivalry with Brighton just I mean, everyone thinks it goes back.
It doesn't, right?
I think back in the mid 70s, just Rick past the 70s, but
yep.
That's right. When Alan Mullery was there, I think about 1956, the rivalry really started. And that was
right. That
was more about the managers not liking each other.
Right.
And then Alan Mullery will turn around and say it's nothing to do with that, but it was. And it just spread onto the players. And Terry Venables made a big thing about any time we played Brighton, we weren't gonna get beat. We'd do anything to not get beat. And I think it was about 3 or 4 years before Brighton actually turned us over. I think it was one Christmas or New Year's 79 or 1980. After about four or five games we played against Brighton, they never beat us, and we was always turning them over. And I think that was probably one of my saddest days at Crystal Palace when they actually beat us.
Yeah, mine too.
And I think one abiding memory was they were so happy to be in the lead with about 15 minutes to go. I remember John Gregory, the old Aston Villa manager,
yes,
who was playing for Brighton at the time there. And with 15 minutes to go, they was, I think, 2 or 3-0 up and sitting on the ball. and then on the other side of the field. And I remember Fish, Paul Winchell, would take it off on a 60-yard dash to try and deposit him and the ball into the stands.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Just at the corner of his side, John Gregory saw it and quickly jumped up off the ball and cleared it as quick as he could and just put the brakes on. But he was after him, and that was the sort of thing. It wasn't. There was no love lost between the teams, but there was a tinge of it went out of it when they beat us after about three or four seasons, because. If Palace fans had their way now, they'd probably say that they are their biggest rivals. If you're from outside the Palace area, Brighton area, honestly, I played a lot of football from outside the after I left Palace, and they can't understand why they're such big rivals.
Yeah.
Because of the proximity of the clubs, and you try and explain to them, but they
don't understand.
They still don't see it.
Hi Vince, good evening mate, it's Nick here. I'm the guy that was I was at the game, okay? I've got a couple of questions for you. Please tell me, Terence alluded to it a minute ago that obviously we went on and got promoted. Did the team of the 80s label weigh heavily on you guys, okay? And what was life like under the what turned out to be the future England manager, Terry Venables?
Yeah, the team of the 80s tag was a bit unfortunate, and the story of that is that we went up to, we had a great start to our campaign in the top division, and we went to, we beat Notts Forest, who were European Cup holders at the time, and the following weekend we after that game we thought we'd cracked it, basically. A bunch of young players who thought, this is just the easiest thing in the world, all we do is keep winning games, and we've gone to the top of the league, and who we got next week, Terry? You said Liverpool away. We've never played at Anfield before, but we've beaten the European champions, and it can't be so bad going up to Anfield. We've heard lots about it, and people like Doug Leash and McDermott have seen it's not a problem, because we've, like I said, we've just beaten the European champions, and we went up there and they promptly smacked our backsides, and they could have won 10, and it was welcome to the real world then. And,
yeah.
When we travelled, the reason I told the story is because we travelled up on the Friday, and there was a, a,
great sports reporter called Jeff Powell from the Daily Express, who was really good mates with Terry Venables. And he went up with us, travelled up with us, spoke to us, listened to Terry Venables and his vision of football, and looked at all these young players that Terry had, who didn't have a care in the world. We were going up to Anfield, but it didn't bother us. We just thought we were going to be playing another friendly at Croydon or Bromley. And we treated it like that. And unfortunately, that phrase was coined on the Saturday morning before the game.
Yeah.
And it should have been the team that played like they were 80, not like the team of the 80. So it's just an unfortunate tag. And the Liverpool boys picked up on it. And you don't go to... The one thing you do, you don't go to places like Anfield against possibly one of the great teams of the 20th century, which they were, and take the mickey out of them. You know, you have to have the right attitude. And football does that to you. You haven't got the right attitude and you take the mickey out of teams or players, it's got a habit of coming back to bite you on the bum. Unfortunately, you don't learn that until you're a few years in the game. As young players, you don't see that. And with Terry Venables, he was just brilliant. He, you know, anyone that's worked with him, he might have his critics, there's a lot of Palace fans that have criticised him because of stuff that happened in his second spell.
That's right.
Which I find very sad. Not with the fans, I find very sad for Terry because it sort of tarnished the great things he had done at that football club. And also tarnished a little bit like with Malcolm Allison, because Big Mal bought him there. And they were two visionaries. And, you know, I can't speak highly enough about Terry Venables as a football man. I know I'd never have been a footballer without him. Unfortunately, when people ask me, I always say the problem with Terry Venables was that he was just too clever. And he was too clever to the extent where he thought that I'll come away as well and get involved in the stuff outside football. And there's cleverer people than Terry Venables outside football, i.e. I'll use Alan Sugar at Tottenham as an example. I live now just outside Portsmouth, and Terry Venables' name is Mud at Portsmouth. And he could have quite easily had a great name down at Portsmouth as well, because they've got a great stand and the atmosphere is brilliant at Fratton Park, but the stand would never have been built without Terry Venables' input. But he got involved in certain things which the fans have not forgiven him for. And the same with Palace. So, you know, with Palace and Portsmouth fans, I've got great affinity with both sets of fans. And funnily enough, they've got great affinity with me, but they've also got great dislike for Terry Venables, which I think is really unfair. And I always try and stand Terry's corner when I bump into Palace fans and Pompey fans, because the guy doesn't deserve it. I can't speak highly enough about his ideas about football and everything else. It might annoy a lot of people to hear that, but that's, you know, how I feel. And if you talk to players that have played under him at any club, they'll say exactly the same. And they can't all be wrong, can they?
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk. The next generation of fantasy football.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.